Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, partly because it's been rare that I've been able to bring good news to the audiences I've been speaking to, but this is one of those cases. I'll talk about the intensity of the drought in 2011, current status, and what looks like going forward, both in the immediate future and over the longer term. This was the U.S. drought monitor at the height of the drought in the end of September 2011. The dark red color is reserved for drought that should only occur about once every 50 years. And it affected all of Texas. And indeed, much of the southern United States, from Arizona to the Carolinas, and from Kansas all the way down into central Mexico. But Texas was certainly the ground zero for the drought. And to give a sense of its historic proportions, this is a plot of rainfall during the 12 months ending in last September in each of the climate divisions in Texas. And let's look at the Texas panhandle. The blue column indicates the amount of rain that occurred during that 12-month period. Each tick mark is 5 inches, so this represents about 6.5 inches in the panhandle over 12 months. The red is the previous record 12-month lowest value, which was about 11 inches. So panhandle got just a little more than half of their previous record low. And normal up here around 20 inches, so it was much less than 50% of normal. You can see throughout the state, similar story. Only north central Texas managed to not break their record for driest 12 months on record. In addition to the low rainfall, we also had a bit of an issue with high temperatures. This is a plot of rainfall during the late spring and summer months against temperature. And each dot is a year going all the way back to the beginning of statewide records in 1895. And you can see there's a general tendency when it's wetter to be cooler. That's because when there's less moisture in the ground, there's less energy from the sun that goes into evaporating that water. And so there's more energy that goes into just heating the ground and heating the air above the ground. And we had the extreme case of that in 2011, this red dot up in the upper left. Not only was it the driest summer on record, it was the hottest by quite a large margin, broke the previous record by 2.5 degrees. You know, it's a hot day when you break the previous daily record by 2.5 degrees, but this was the average over the entire month, or over the entire summer. So in addition to problems with lack of rainfall, there were also problems with amounts of evaporation from lakes and rivers greater than anything that had ever been experienced in Texas, going back to through the history of weather records. This is a plot showing the stream flow in the Brazos River at Hempstead, which I borrowed from the BRA because I think it's pretty impressive how the, while the stream flow is fairly steady, that was mainly because of releases to downstream water users. And the estimated stream flow in the absence of releases got down near the bottom of the chart for about a month and a half during the summer, indicating that without the storage of water and then subsequent release during the dry months, Brazos River would have decreased to a trickle. So these were extreme conditions for Texas. I looked around the globe to find where in the world those would be normal weather conditions, and it turns out eastern Pakistan is pretty much normally against what we had last summer. You can see they've adapted with loose-fitting clothing and all that. The forest situation is not nearly as prolific with trees as it is in central Texas. And this is a secret nuclear facility. Better not talk about that. Okay, since then, things have improved. We have had 3 straight months statewide of above normal rainfall. March will be the fourth once it ends. And as a consequence, there are large portions of the state now that are drought-free, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor, including right here in Waco. And other parts are listed as this yellow, abnormally dry, which mainly indicates that some of the impacts from drought, such as water restrictions and so forth, are still in place but are gradually going away. Now, the good news is mainly focused on the more populated parts of the state. Upstream in West Texas, though, we've still got exceptional drought, and conditions are worse there now than they were at this time last year. So the rain here is great for us. It's too bad it couldn't have been distributed evenly, because we're going to be talking now about the West Texas drought and maybe West and South Texas, depending on how things turn out. This is the rainfall over the past 6 months when we've been getting ample rains. This is one of a set of products that the State Climate Office produces to put rain in a historical perspective. In this case, looking at rainfall over the past 3 to 9 months and ranking it as in the drought monitor in terms of dryness or, on the wet side, abnormal or exceptional wetness. And we see the rain has mainly been in north-central Texas, but most of eastern Texas has received above normal rainfall. But during this period, when we've been grateful for the rain, South Texas, West Texas, and much of the Panhandle has had the drought continue and get worse because of less rainfall. And so overall, if you look at the past 18 months' worth of rain, there's still extreme lack of water in many parts of the state. Effectively, we could carve up conditions along the Brazos River into three segments. First segment, West Texas, the rainfall even during the winter has been below normal. So it's been a steady worsening of drought conditions. Impacts have not been particularly large during the winter time because grasses are dormant. There's not a lot of agricultural activity, but this bodes pretty poorly for what's going to happen this summer when temperatures warm up again. And you can see the long-term rainfall deficits are extreme or exceptional in that region. Here's an example. Stream flow from the Salt Fork of the Brazos River near Aspermont. And we're looking from the beginning of 2010 to remind you what a wet year looks like all the way to the present. And this is a log graph, so each one of these labels is an increase in stream flow by a factor of 10. And you can see as the evaporation has decreased during the wintertime, there's a little bit more stream flow, but half a cubic foot per second is not even a stream, really. And it's about one-tenth of the amount of stream flow that was present at this time last year, when we were already gotten to the end of the driest March on record, and certainly way below what normal conditions would be. Now, in the middle segment, we've had quite a bit of rain during the past 6 months, and it's been enough to essentially wipe out any long-term deficits that might have been present. Although the extra evaporation probably means we should have paid back the rainfall debt with interest. A consequence of this for stream flow, this is the Bosque River, which I'm showing because it's not affected by releases from dams. And you can see how stream flow plummeted to a minimum in September of 2011, and we're now back to conditions similar to what we had back in 2010 during a wet year, so that essentially there is no more signal of drought along this river. Finally, the downstream portion of the Brazos River has also received a lot of rain during the past 6 months, which has not been enough to make up for the long-term deficit. But on the other hand, you don't really need to make up the long-term deficit because there's the rainfall normal amount is large enough that it can fully replenish and recharge lakes and reservoirs, and essentially the long-term debt gets forgotten. And so we see, for example, the Brazos River near Richmond is presently up at 40,000 cubic feet per second, which it hadn't seen since the early part of 2010. And the smaller streams in that area are also typically running above normal or above median, even in between the rainfall events. And this doesn't include the current rainfall. So the parts of Texas where most people live, the drought is going to become a memory unless things suddenly turn dry again. But in West Texas, it's still an ongoing emergency. Now, looking forward, the main tool we have for forecasting rainfall on a seasonal basis is El Nino and La Nina. And 4 years out of five, when we have a La Nina in the wintertime, it means we get less rainfall than normal. Consequently, the La in La Nina stands for less agua. Good way to remember it. El Nino is extra liquid. La Nina is when the tropical Pacific is colder than normal. And this is a graph of temperatures in different segments of the tropical Pacific. Blue is below normal, orange is above normal. And this goes back a year. Last summer we were feeling fairly optimistic, but then La Nina returned for a second year. But since January, February, temperatures have been warming up in the tropical Pacific. And parts of it, they're back to normal. Other parts, they're on their way to normal. The expectation is by end of next month, La Nina conditions will be gone in the tropical Pacific. Here's a current map of the sea surface temperatures in the tropics. With the anomalies down here, it's colder than normal still near the equator, near the dateline, but this is much closer to normal than anything we've been seeing over the past few months. Unfortunately, we don't know whether La Nina is going to do the same thing it did last year and return for a third time. Historically, we've had over the past century about 10 instances of two La Nina years in a row, and the third year has also been a La Nina four times out of those 10. The other six has been an El Nino, which typically means wet weather for Texas. The problem with seasonal forecasting, though, is that the La Nina has a bigger effect during some year seasons than others. And in the summertime, there's not much of an impact. So basically, we don't know how to forecast summertime rainfall very well. And the long-term outlooks basically say, could be normal, could be above normal, could be below normal. There's no clear signal pointing in any particular direction for the next several months. The reason La Nina gets used is it tends to come and go on a multi-month time scale, so it actually, you can look at how it's evolving and you'll know what it's going to look like in a few months, and you can use that information to make an outlook for the weather conditions. But as we saw this year, there's a lot of other things that affect the weather that aren't predictable. And every once in a while, you get lucky. This was about the best possible scenario for the rainfall this year, given that we had a La Nina in place. Now, I want to talk now about beyond this next year, where we actually have a little bit more information than we do for this summer, because of longer-term things that affect the climate. First off, we're going to look at precipitation. And over on the left, we've got historical values for eight different regions of the state. From the Panhandle to southeast Texas would be the Brazos River Basin, which is mainly going to be the blue curves. But they all hold together pretty well, and they tell the same story, which is, first off, a gradual increase in rainfall. This is 90% of the long-term average down here. The one line would be 100% of long-term average, and by the most recent time, we're up to about 105, 110% of long-term average. So that translates into about a 15 to 20% increase of rainfall over the past century. I've smoothed the curves here so you don't see the massive ups and downs of La Nina and El Nino, but you still see the drought period of the 50s and 60s showing up as a minimum near the middle of this diagram. And over closer to the right-hand side, where the past 20 years have actually been the wettest years on record for Texas. Now, the outlook here on the right is based upon climate models using greenhouse gas forcing. Now, greenhouse gases essentially play the same role in long-term climate outlooks as La Nina does in seasonal outlooks. It's only one of many factors that affects the climate. You got solar variability, you've got volcanoes and various other things, but it's the only one that is on a clear enough trend that you can actually say what the concentrations of greenhouse gas is going to be like in 20 or 30 years. And so it's the only part of the climate system that's in some sense partially predictable. So reality is going to depend on everything that happens to the climate, which could be above or below these outlooks. But in any case, the projected effect of climate change on Texas rainfall is fairly small, and it has a fairly small range. In fact, the decrease here, about 5%, is much less than the increase we have observed before. And it's also less than this decade-to-decade variability that has appeared historically. So actually, in terms of climate change over the foreseeable future, we don't have to worry about it in terms of rainfall for Texas. What we have to worry about is what's driving these ups and downs, and is it going to be continued an uptrend, or are we in some sort of downward cycle at this point? And to get at that, we go to the factors affecting natural variability, mainly sea surface temperatures. So this is a correlation between the rainfall conditions over Texas and New Mexico and Arizona, correlated with sea surface temperatures throughout the globe. Now, with La Nina, we know that a cold tropical Pacific Ocean tends to produce dry weather in Texas. So low temperature, low rainfall, that should be a positive correlation. We see that here. The oranges and reds are positive correlations in the tropical Pacific. We've also got positive correlations in the Indian Ocean and the South Atlantic, or South Pacific. Now, those aren't actually affecting our weather directly, but the Pacific Ocean tends to have its temperature pattern change simultaneously throughout the basin. It goes positive and negative, positive, negative. So this is reflecting a normal pattern that shows up. Sometimes the tropics will be warm, sometimes be cool. When the tropics are warm, the North Pacific will be cool, and vice versa. And now if this pattern has some sort of decade scale variation, then maybe we can look forward another decade and see what might happen. Similarly, in the Atlantic Ocean, we have cooler temperature, well, negative correlation, meaning that cool temperatures favor rain and warm temperatures favor dry conditions. And part of that, let me go on to the next slide. Let's look at how that Pacific pattern has varied over the past century and how the Atlantic sea surface temperatures have varied over the past century. And remember, when you have a cold Pacific, that would tend to be dry conditions within the state. And it's not based just on statistics. Modeling demonstrates the actual chain of events that leads to dry conditions in Texas. So it's a robust relationship. Similarly, in the Atlantic, it's sort of the opposite effect. When the Atlantic's warm, we tend to have less rainfall. And you see, in the 1950s, the Pacific was very cold, the Atlantic was very warm, and as you know, we had the drought of the 50s. In fact, I shaded in the periods in which we have frequent droughts within the state of Texas. The droughty period during the early 20th century, the droughts of the 50s and 60s, and now again since 1996, we've been experiencing frequent droughts. And all three of those are periods in which the Pacific Ocean tropics tended to be cooler than normal. And in at least two of those cases, the 50s and the present, the Atlantic Ocean was also warmer than normal. So, at least on a long time scale, we're experiencing the same sort of conditions right now as we're experienced during the 50s and 60s. In other words, we're in the middle of this of a period when we're susceptible to drought, when the long-term factors indicate dry conditions. The good news with that is that it's cyclical. It's not regular enough you can predict it, but it tends to be cold for about 20 years, then it's warm for maybe about 20 years or so. And it's been tended to be on the cold side since about 2000. So presumably we're perhaps more than halfway through this current period of drought susceptibility. And same thing for the Atlantic. We don't have enough of a record here to know how long the Atlantic is going to stay warm. But right now, it's indicating dry conditions. Now, you're probably familiar with the Atlantic being warm since 1995 because of the effect of the Atlantic Ocean on hurricanes. We've been having active hurricane season since 1995 when the Atlantic warmed up. And you might think, well, with a warm Atlantic, more hurricanes, that means better chance of rain for Texas. So why would this indicate dry conditions? Well, it turns out that if you got a nice warm Atlantic, a warm Caribbean, warm Gulf of Mexico, that's where the thunderstorms are going to take place. And what goes up has to come down. The sinking air is going to be over the land so that thunderstorm activity over Texas gets suppressed when the thunderstorms are enhanced over the ocean. One other tidbit of good news with that, right now Atlantic temperatures are pretty close to normal. They're predicting maybe a normal to less active than normal hurricane season, which is potentially good news for us in the summertime. It might mean we'll get normal rainfall for a change. Last fact I want to look at is temperature. You remember from this drought, temperature plays an important role with evaporation and the loss of water from reservoirs. And unlike with rainfall, the temperature trend, at least with this one climate factor, is expected to continue being a positive trend. Basically, the projections have temperature increasing at the same rate as they have been increasing since the cold decades of the 1970s. Now, to give you a perspective on the amount of temperature change, last summer was over 5 degrees above normal Fahrenheit, which would be somewhere at the top of this diagram. So what we experienced last summer, if these projections are correct, we're not going to see that being normal conditions in our lifetimes. But the warmer things get in terms of the baseline temperature, the more likely it is that excessive heat is going to occur. And in any case, this means that evaporation is going to be a larger and larger issue as time goes on. So to summarize, over the going from short to long term, right now La Nina is dissipating, which is good news. Drought is at least temporarily over for central East Texas and southeast Texas. But that doesn't mean that it might not come back. We'll have to wait until the summer until we have a good sense of whether we're looking at another La Nina year again or whether it's going to be El Nino or maybe something neutral in between. Meanwhile, over the longer term, we've got a cold tropical Pacific, which is called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, and the warm North Atlantic, which is the Atlantic Multi-Decadal Oscillation, means right now we're in a period of susceptibility for drought. ONO doesn't actually stand for anything. It's just my expression of, ooh, we're in another drought period. We can't predict how long at this point. It's a really active area of research to try to pin down these cycles and be able to predict them using computer models. But right now, best we can do is say they appear to be self-limiting, and we may be in it for another few years, perhaps a decade, but hard to say. And it's certainly possible we might see a drought like the 1950s, and I think in West Texas they actually are right now seeing a drought like the 1950s. But since it is cyclical, it will get wet again, perhaps return to the above the long-term average rainfall amounts that we have gotten used to over the past few decades. In the very long term, precipitation changes. Rainfall could go up or down, but not by much apparently. But the main signal is the warmer temperatures, which has implications for evaporation and stream flow, which means that, bottom line, future droughts are likely to be hotter than the droughts from the 20th century were. And we had a little bit of a taste of that this year. Finally, my contact information, if you have specific questions that you don't want to ask right here, you can get hold of me by email or by phone. Our website, atmo.tamo.edu/OSC, is being seriously upgraded, so I'm proud to say in a couple of weeks we'll have a new website with a lot of handy climate information on it, climatetexas.tamo.edu. And I also have a blog in which I talk about weather and climate issues and often post updates on the drought status. So like I said, I'd be happy to answer questions.
You know, the impact on the Colorado River Basin hasn't been the same as the impact on the Brazos River Basin, and you know, I don't get that out of your charts. I mean, let's
take a look at that. You can go back to the short-term rainfall. And we're getting there. About two or three more. Okay, so there's a couple things going on in the Colorado River. First of all, the upper Colorado River, from about here upstream, they're sort of in a perpetual drought situation where reservoir levels have been steadily declining for over a decade. And since the rainfall during the past 6 months has only been near normal, and it's during the time of the year when they don't get a lot of rainfall anyway, there's been absolutely no recovery there. And then to go downstream a little bit, the Highland Lakes, which is your Lake Buchanan, Lake Travis, their basin includes areas near San Angelo that have gotten a lot of rain, but also areas of the hill country that are still have long-term deficits. If we look at rainfall totals, it's been nice and wet in parts of that area and just sort of wet elsewhere. So there's been some response to stream flow, but because normal rainfall totals are smaller, it takes a longer time to saturate the soil column and produce a significant amount of runoff with storms. So they really only got to that point of being able to see inflow to lakes start rising in February, whereas in the Brazos River, normal rainfall is higher, and the drought in the Brazos River during 2011 was not as intense, so there wasn't as much of a deficit to make up. So recovery of reservoirs started about a month or two earlier along the Brazos River than they have on the Colorado River. Okay, thank you.